This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
The aftermath of a loss in an NFL city is truly something to behold. In particular, after a playoff loss. And here we are, one, two, three, now 4 days removed from the Seahawks season ending in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And we have come to some very, very interesting hot takes on those mean internet streets. Good morning, everybody. I am Paul Gallant. I am joined by former wide receiver Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill on this edition of Danny and Gallant. Bump, how you doing, buddy?
Awesome, as always. How about yourself there, Paul?
I'm doing well. And I am also in a very curious mood. Yesterday, I saw a pair of headlines, and I am not going to slam the people that put these pieces together, but there was an article on The Athletic from Ben Baldwin, a guy I very much respect. Is Pete Carroll the right coach for this version of the Seahawks? Another headline, this one from the USA Today's Seahawks Wire. If Pete Carroll won't change, the Seahawks need to move on before he wastes Russell Wilson's prime. And of course, there are other people, Bump, on Twitter that are going to suggest the same thing. Is Pete Carroll holding Russell Wilson back? I don't know how large this population is of people that are annoyed, disgruntled with Pete Carroll being the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Probably isn't that many, and I might be creating a straw army. But here's what I want to do to that straw army. I want to get a flamethrower out, and I want to light it up. And because to me, Bump, I read these and I just think they're just so overreactionary and they don't seem to really have a plan as far as how to get more out of this Seahawks team. It's just, it's Pete's fault.
It's crazy talk. Pete Carroll, the last 10 years, he's won 100 games here. That's a 10, if my math is right, that's 10 games per year. He's gone to the Super Bowl twice, won a Super Bowl. I can get where people are kind of frustrated because they think that Russell Wilson can do more, and he's probably capable of doing more. But if you look at it, the past 2 years, he's been allowed to do a bit more. This is his second year with his new offensive coordinator, Schottenheimer, and Russ is just now entering, I feel like, that phase to where he's ready and capable of taking a game over and leading. Maybe the last 3 years, maybe we're a year behind, but to think that the answer to get the Seattle Seahawks over the hump is to get rid of Pete Carroll is crazy. One, he's on the defensive side of the ball. He's not calling plays on offense. He has influence on what's going on offense, but that's Schottenheimer's job. And two, the reason why I'm okay, not okay with the loss, but I feel better about the playoff loss was because last year it took until the fourth quarter for the Hawks to be like, okay, let Russell Wilson go. This year, out of halftime, they let him loose, they let him be. And I think that if there is no progress in that sense to where he's still coming out in the fourth quarter and running the heck out of the ball and not letting Russell Wilson be special earlier, then there would be an issue for me. But it seems like they're starting to realize, look, let this guy throw the ball around, let him run, let him use his feet, let him do his thing. If you're looking at both of these teams from last year and this year, and you think they're in the same spot as far as opening up the playbook and letting Russell Wilson be, then you're not really paying attention to what's going on. I get your frustration. I get your disappointment. I get that you thought this team could make it to the NFC conference game, which they should. They could have, but injuries or whatnot, things happen. But let's not overreact, people. Pete Carroll's a good coach.
The first part of what you laid out is that exact sentiment. And like you, I understand where it comes from, and I as well was frustrated when the Seahawks decided, we're going to run a whole lot of Marshawn Lynch in the first half. That was a doomed strategy. That said, I do understand it to a point because the Packers' run defense is worse than their pass defense. Yep. Their pass defense is very, very good. For those who wanted the Seahawks to go for it on that 4th-and-11, good luck with that pass rush and with that defense. This is not Philadelphia that you were going up against. But to get back to the idea of moving on from Pete Carroll as if that is some sort of solution. This is a team that had no pass rush, an offensive line that can't pass protect, a secondary featuring one trustworthy corner. It's unfortunate that Trey Flowers really fell back to earth at the end of the year. I thought he was making some progress, but he did. And also on offense, they were down to their fourth string running back, who was, by the way, Marshawn Lynch slash Travis Homer, and a practice squad tight end in Jacob Hollister. To press the reset button at head coach means all sorts of unknown, and I think that Ben Baldwin actually did a very good job of laying out both the pros and the cons of moving on from someone like Pete Carroll, but I think you have to look at it from this perspective. If you got a guy in Russell Wilson who is in his prime, and even if you feel like maybe they should be allowing him to cook, as the Seahawks Twitter says so often, you also have to realize that there are some times where he is the guy that's struggling out there. He's holding the football on too long. This is not ever a situation where it's just one person to blame in this sport. I know that we like to make it that way. We like to make it about the quarterback when you don't have one. We like to make it about the head coach when the head coach makes a couple of head-scratching decisions. By the way, that's across the NFL. But if you are going to decide that you're going to put out a piece talking about, okay, well, it's probably a better idea to move on from Pete Carroll because he's holding Russell Wilson back, I need to have a solution. I need to have what that next step is. And that's my big issue right now. No one has that next step.
Who else is out there? Who are you going to get with this much experience? And then the culture, man. People sleep on the culture. Like, it's a healthy environment in Seattle. It's not toxic. It's not the Bengals from years ago. It's not the Cleveland Browns where guys don't respect the coach. And then you look at what he's done with his talent. They're not the most talented football team out there. The 49ers are more talented. Baltimore Ravens are more talented. The Saints are more talented. Yet, they're spoken in the same sentence with these guys, and it's because of the culture and the scheme and the way they get these guys to overachieve.
Let's focus on that culture for a second. I am curious as to how people feel about the majority of hires that have been made across the National Football League over the last couple of seasons, but the trend has been, we're going to find an assistant coach that is doing something extremely well. This assistant head coach, traditionally over the last few years, has been someone who is an offensive savant. Yep. Sean McVay, hopefully with Matt LaFleur, that's what Green Bay was thinking. Zach Taylor with the Cincinnati Bengals. That last offseason was the go-to trend. But it is something else entirely to go from being a coordinator to being a head coach. And I think some people will see on the sidelines the time management issues that a guy like Pete Carroll has, and they assume, oh, only Pete Carroll has these issues. No, this is across the NFL, because being a head coach, there are a lot of in-game decisions that you have to make, but more importantly, that culture that you just mentioned, Bump. And you've played in one of these locker rooms before, and I'm sure that you have seen guys that all of a sudden are being asked to do things that they have never done before, going from being a coordinator or an assistant coach to the big man in charge, and they have struggled in that aspect.
When you make the transition from a coordinator or an assistant coach to a head coach, you learn very quickly that you have to delegate. There's no way that you can control every aspect of a football game as a head coach. You got to hire guys around you that you trust to remind you of timeouts, to get the right personnel out there, to handle a scouting report, to give you some tips or advice of what you're seeing from the press box. It's not an easy job. People think, oh, you're the head coach, you're pulling all the strings. You should be involved in every decision that's being made, and that's just not realistic. So I think that if there are changes that are going to be made in the Seattle Seahawks, one, you got to switch up the personnel. You don't bring the same team back from this year and expect a different result. Two, maybe there's some coaching changes that go along. Maybe get a different coach here, a different coach there.
Doesn't feel like that's going to happen.
No, and there's no reason for it to happen. But those are the changes that you make in this situation. You don't get rid of the head coach.
Right.
The guy who brought this team from not making it to the playoffs to dang near every year they're in the playoffs. Every year they're in the hunt. It seems like they're in the hunt, at least, no matter who they have out there. So I think people just need to relax. People are emotional right now. It's emotional time in Seattle, and they're overreacting. Calm down.
And it's not a lot of people. It is a few people. But for those few people, that is what we are saying right now. It is time for you to relax. Don't do it where you want to go do it, right? Is that, those are the lyrics?
Not the lyrics, but that's the harmony, I think.
It's something like that. Yeah. If you've watched Zoolander, you'll know what I'm talking about. This is when Zoolander's getting, brainwashed by one Mugatu. And look, I'm sure that there are a lot of coaching hires out there, and the idea of the unknown, especially after 10 years of the same coach, for some people, they think, okay, well, it's going to lead to magical sunshine and rainbows. But when you look at some of the possibilities that you have, that could be that next head coach, I think Ben Baldwin suggested Eric Bieniemy with the Kansas City Chiefs. I really think a small child could run the Kansas City Chiefs offense. Not to be disrespectful to coaches in the NFL.
There were a lot of head coaching positions open as well this year, and so nobody really held out for him.
Right you are, Jessamyn McIntyre. And also, you take a look at a Greg Roman. I thought Greg Roman was going to get hired. Well, Greg Roman didn't do so well against the Tennessee Titans in the second round of the playoffs when he got punched in the mouth. The Ravens really had no answer. And by the way, look, Greg Roman's also someone that does not have a head coaching gig.
R-E-L-A-X.
Aaron, go away. We don't need to hear from you, Aaron. It's only been a couple of days. Like, whatever. By the way, over the course of today's show, we need to figure out who we're rooting for this weekend. I mean, you need to have some sort of rooting interest when you're a conference championship weekend. It's going to be a whole lot of fun this morning on Danny and Gallant with Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. It is now time for What to Watch For.
What to Watch For every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Jess, what's up?
Yo, what is up?
Not
you want to know what to watch for?
I want to know what to watch for.
Well, this is actually something really special that happened yesterday. Steve Gleason, who suffers from ALS, I'm sorry, was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal yesterday for his advocacy with people who suffer from the same disease. And he has had probably one of the most strong attitudes I've seen throughout this disease that is, as it has taken away his abilities. Every time I've gotten to see him when he does come back to the Palouse at Washington State, it's very special. And this is a rightful honor.
I agree. It is. I think it's one of the worst diseases, if not the absolute worst diseases that there is. As someone who had a friend in high school whose father very quickly passed away from the disease, to die and as a basically your body becomes a tomb for you is absolutely heartbreaking. And it's very cool that Steve Gleason is still trying to be out in the public and to generate as much awareness as he possibly can for this horrible illness. I hope we beat it someday. I think we've got a long way to go, but it's people like him that are out there and that are saying, like, hey man, like this is what happens. This is what we need to beat. I do really like it.
Yeah, I love it, man. Gleason has been, makes me even more proud to be a Coug when you see a guy like Gleason doing what he does. He's helped the Steve Gleason Act, expanded Medicare for patients with diseases like ALS. So he's out there. He's not shying away from it. He's out in the public. He's making people aware. I love it. Thank you, Steve Gleason. Go Cougs.
What to watch for?
Well, we take a look at the UW Hoops team, and it has not been good for them of late. They host Oregon State tonight after two straight losses to Cal and to Stanford. The loss of Quade Green is going to hurt this team. It really is, and it's unfortunate because I really did think that the Dogs were building towards something. They're a lot of fun to watch. They really are. I'm wearing a Syracuse shirt today. I'll be honest, like, even though Syracuse won a basketball game yesterday, they're just not that fun. This team has a lot of athletic players. I hope that by the end of the year that they figure out what they're doing at the point guard situation. I would think that a game against Oregon State can help them get back on the right track, but you never know.
Yeah, Oregon State should be their bounce back game. You lose your point guard, you lose your general, you lose your quarterback, the guy making things happen. And they're young. They got some young players that they're depending on at some point of the season. Unless you have all these five stars like a Kentucky has or something, these young guys are going to play like young guys. Unfortunately, it's happening for them now, but they're playing Oregon State. They should be able to get back on track.
Last up.
What to watch for.
Our beloved Cougs host Oregon and will retire Coug legend Klay Thompson's jersey on Saturday with Steph Curry in attendance. I'm very curious as to how Steph Curry and Klay Thompson will arrive in the Palouse. What are they going to do?
They're not going through Spokane, Paul.
Helicopter?
I can tell you that.
They're not
going
to go the Paul Gallant route of driving across the state and then staying in Spokane. And
that's
then
the Gardner Minshew way of travel these days.
I respect that way of travel. I mean, it might be a fun road trip. It's not like the Warriors are having fun this year. It's absolutely miserable for them. It's been a really rough year.
They need to switch it up. My question is, Steph Curry, are you ready for the Palouse? It's a different place, man. He's never been there. I hope Klay is giving him the rundown of what to expect. But the fact that Stephen Curry is coming with Klay is awesome. That'll give the Cougs something to cheer about, you know, because obviously their basketball season has been great thus far. But you got Klay and Steph coming into town.
When you were there, was there ever a celebrity of that magnitude that came on campus?
No, came on campus. Taylor Swift, but it was before she was like the Taylor Swift. She was like 15 years old or something like that. Just getting going. people like start their careers in Pullman, get that little college tour going. But Taylor Swift, as big as it got when I was there.
I'm very curious as to what the nightlife will be like on a night where Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are in the house. I would definitely be one of those kind of borderline creepy people that might be trying to stalk them everywhere that they go. All right, that time of the morning, it is time for the Professor John Clayton to join us for his morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the Professor John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Do you think that Pete Carroll is holding Russell Wilson back like some of Seahawks Twitter is feeling on this Thursday morning?
No, are you kidding? Give me a break. What? Where's this coming from?
This is coming from a couple of different articles. There's Ben Baldwin in The Athletic. There is someone in the USA Today. And I think there are a lot of fans right now.
This is the USA Today that predicted a 5-win season back in 2018?
Off the top of my head, John, I honestly don't know. I do think that there is enough of a percentage of Seahawk fans that do feel this way. Can you put their minds at ease?
They won 11 games. They won a playoff game. They were in the division round of the playoffs when they were down to their fourth string. I mean, how are you holding anybody back when you're down to your fourth string running back, your fourth string tight end, your offensive line is so banged up you may be without two or three starters? Are you kidding me? Give me a break. I mean, it's to get that far is an amazing coaching accomplishment. Sure, they faltered down the stretch, but why did they falter? They were injured.
I feel the same way as you. I do wonder about the idea of changing the approach a little bit offensively, and I think that's one of the other things people get frustrated with. They want to see Russell Wilson be able to throw the football a little bit more. But do you think that given who they were playing against this past Sunday, that the approach was the correct one to try to run the football, see what happens?
Yeah. No, exactly. Because, again, you have to try it. But the problem is you knew it probably was not going to work, and it didn't work. And so then Russell had to run a little bit more just to get any kind of yards on the ground. But, no, it's a silly thought to think that it's like, you why change the philosophy when the philosophy has gotten you into the playoffs all but like 2 years or something of that nature? And, again, you're building on it. I mean, the offense of this year has built upon from the offense of the previous year because, you know, they added screen passes. They got, you know, quick passes to the tight end. I mean, they did more things. But the philosophy of this team is running the football, particularly in a league right now that is getting a little bit more appreciation for the run. I mean, you notice that most of the teams that made at least a divisional round had either good running backs, a good running game. And normally, if you have, seven to nine each year of the top rushing teams in the football make the playoffs. The difference is you've got to find a way to get out of the wild card round and get some home games. Simple as that. I mean, everybody brings up the stats of the five division games, right? Five division games that they lost. Well, they were all on the road. Simple as that.
John, do you expect them to open it up a little more for Russell Wilson next year? You talk about the best teams in the NFL run the football, which the Seahawks do well. I see Russell Wilson getting better and better every single year. Is it time that they open it up a bit, or do they stay with the same scheme that they've had the last few years?
Until they can fix the offensive line, no. I mean, they've got to, you know, they can open up a little bit. But, you know, if you notice, I mean, if you want some real stats, look what happens in games where Russell throws over 35 passes. They're usually losses. And that's because, you know, something's breaking down. And, of course, the more passes he throws, the more times he gets hit because of that. And so, no, I have to think that, you know, if the offensive line gets that much better, then I think you can consider it. Until that happens, you cannot.
Is that ever going to happen? Danny and I were discussing that yesterday, and Danny said, you know what? We seem to have this conversation so much, I'm just going to play an audio recording of me talking about the offensive line going forward because we've discussed this the offseason before and the offseason before that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like you think it can try to, but you see some aging elements on that line. I mean, Dwayne Brown at left tackle. I mean, DJ Fluker's still young. I don't think Mike Iupati's going to be back. I mean, Justin Britt's now coming off the ACL, and you have to figure out what to do at right tackle, and I don't think it's going to be Jermaine Ifedi. So now, where this year the mission was to try to keep the line as close to being together as possible, and they were able to bring back four starters, I don't know if that's going to happen this year. So this may be a two-year process on the offensive line, but they can make it better. There's no question.
John, if you're the GM, what's the first move you're making as soon as free agency hits?
trying to sign Devin Clowney. I think that's going to be one of the keys. And, of course, that's the thing. In free agency, I don't know how active they're going to be because they're going to lose players in free agency, and they don't want to try to lose compensatory picks. I mean, they got to kind of be picky. And, you know, they're not going to go out and spend, I think, $10 million on somebody. You know, they can go out and maybe see, you know, what the $3 and $4 million market is for guys, even the $2 million market. But I don't think they're going to be aggressive in free agency like most playoff teams are because, again, you know, they're going to be losing guys and they're going to be getting compensatory picks.
$60 million plus in cap space. We'll see what they end up doing with it. Jason Garrett, we're hearing his name attached to the New York Giants yet again. Do you feel that he will be with the New York Giants, and is he a fit with this new Giants regime?
I don't know if he's a fit. I mean, I think that it very well could happen because that had been a rumble that had been there at least when he was still with the Dallas Cowboys that maybe he'd be consideration for offensive coordinator. But now at least he's getting the interview. We'll see where he goes. I mean, he is a play caller. That's true. But Kevin Stefanski is one that, you got a coach now in Joe Judge that is looking for something. And I don't know where the connection is, but it is very possible he could be the offensive coordinator.
John, offensive passing coordinator Joe Brady is headed to Carolina. Do you think he can help revive Cam Newton's career?
Probably not. I think that they're going to go now in a rebuilding mode, if that's going to be the case. And so I think that the idea is, particularly now that you know Luke Kuechly's retired, probably Greg Olsen's going to retire, you know, they'll probably have a lot more change. I think they're going to probably go a different direction, particularly you know now that they've gone a different direction in coach and now offensive coordinator. What I'm wondering about, and this is just something I'm wondering about, could Joe Burrow put himself in a position where he doesn't want to go to the Cincinnati Bengals, very much like Eli Manning did back in 2004. And if that's the case, you know, an aggressive owner like David Tepper might be willing to trade up, even though you got a non-aggressive owner in Mike Brown that doesn't want to trade.
He should do that. He should 100% do that. You should not play for the Cincinnati Bengals of your own volition. John, you're a big part of the NFL Hall of Fame committee, and the NFL Centennial class was announced yesterday. Is there anybody that did not make the Hall of Fame that you're disappointed didn't
yeah,
get in?
Yeah, I'm in Cliff Branch, Drew Pearson. Those are the two I think I'm very disappointed, and Randy Gradishar. I thought those three can get in. You know, there was certainly an effort, and maybe rightfully so, by the Hall that they wanted to make sure they take care of as many players from the 50s, 20s, 30s, 40s, and all that, and they were able to get four in. You know, two very, very deserving, and Duke Slater was definitely in, should have been in the mix. They were able to, you know, get a couple more, but I was kind of disappointed that Randy Gradishar, after all those years of being at the linebacker with the Denver Broncos and all the tackles, didn't get in. Certainly Cliff Branch, with the fact that he's been to three Super Bowls, had such a great career and kind of opened the game up for speed. Disappointed he didn't get in. Drew Pearson, I guess the one guy from the Ring of Honor for the Dallas Cowboys that hasn't gotten in.
Yeah, Drew Pearson also, a guy that was involved in a historic play, that Roger Staubach Hail Mary against the Minnesota Vikings. Honestly, I was surprised he didn't get in. And listen, I'm not a part of the process or anything like that. Does he still have a chance to get in?
Oh, yeah. He's still a senior. So next year, the senior committee will meet, and they'll have one, because my guess, normally there's going to be two seniors. I think next year, in fact, probably next month, they're going to vote this in. They're going to have a coach category every year, which I've been pushing for two decades, which I'm so thankful to David Baker of the Hall of Fame for listening and at least considering it. And now if they can vote that in, but that'll take it down to one senior. So, you know, the one thing that was great about this process is it cleaned up 10 seniors that have been kind of in the queue. And so now that opens the door for, you know, somebody like a Drew Pearson to get in.
John, I respect NFL history and the guys who played before, but you mentioned some names, some guys who played earlier in the early decades. Why did it take so long for them to get in if they were, I guess, Hall of Fame eligible?
Well, because what happens is that, you know, the Hall of Fame opened up in 1963 and they had 17 people go in. Since then, it's been a great catch-up period. And then what happens is voters go through different generations. And so, you know, that's why, for example, it's like the four guys that got in, Duke, I'd never heard of before. I mean, I have no idea who they were, and of course, educated in the meeting and all that stuff, and you know, great talk about them. And so, but again, what happens is that you only have a limited number of people that can get in each year. I mean, we see it with the active members of the Hall of Fame, you know, because it's always going to be such a carryover. And what happens when the carryover happens, and you know, then you start to have to judge the generations. I mean, you have to judge the 20s in a period that they didn't really pass the ball more, they punted more, and we really didn't have great blocking on the offensive line. Then, you know, there's so many different eras, and how do you compare the eras? I mean, a lot of the some of the guys, of course, that didn't get in were in the war, World War II, and because of that, you know, they had shorter careers and they didn't get in, and so it's just hard to get in, and so that's why it's such an honor to get that gold jacket.
He's our Hall of Famer, the Professor John Clayton. John, thank you so much for joining us every single morning for the Morning Drive at 7:15.
Okay, thanks.
Coming up next, the Seahawks are about to head into free agency. It's a little bit away from now. It's in March where they'll finally have a chance to go shopping. Who are the positions of priority? What are the positions of priority for this team? We know they need to bring back Jadeveon Clowney. But after that, like, is there one position that jumps out more than the others that they need to get a big-time splash at? We'll discuss that next. He is Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill, and I am Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
No Danny today. He'll be back tomorrow. Michael Bumpus, former NFL wide receiver, along with me, Paul Gallant. So the Seahawks, per over the cap, should have about $66 million or so to spend in free agency. We have discussed what they need to do. I am big on the re-signed Jadeveon Clowney train.
Got to do it.
We could talk about all the other people that the Seahawks should bring back. We've done that already this week. I think now it's time to take a look to the outside and imagine that this was described to me by both Jess and you, Bump, during the break. Apparently there's some sort of like Illuminati black card that allows me to buy whatever I want.
It's called the American Express Centurion Black Card.
The Centurion Black Card. It's apparently a brick.
I've only held them when I'm bartending and charging people for their very expensive drinks. I've never had one.
It sounds very large, and it sounds like you could possibly bludgeon somebody with this. But listen, that's neither here nor there. What we're saying is that all of a sudden we have the power. I'm the captain now. I have all of the money. How do you prioritize what you go after in free agency? I will begin by saying I understand that they need a little help on the offensive line.
Yep.
I also feel like they need to have somebody else that's helping Jadeveon Clowney out. That could be Jaren Reed. It could be somebody from elsewhere. But I really think, just based off of what we saw in this game against the Green Bay Packers, who, by the way, only have Davante Adams as a capable wide receiver, you need a cornerback. You need to bring in somebody at corner. And having talked to my Ravens around the United States of America who cover football in various locations, there are a couple of guys that I feel that the Seahawks should definitely make a phone call about. Number one, Chris Harris, who is a slot cornerback for the Denver Broncos and has been one of the best slot corners in the game for a while. 32 years old. But this is somebody that I feel is probably not going to, I don't know, get crossed over the way that Ugo Amadi, who we hope gets better over time, was against Davante Adams. And on top of that, Bradley Roby, who would be very expensive, who was playing a one-year prove-it deal in Houston this past season, he played well. Sounds like the Texans aren't going to bring him back, which is amusing, just given the way that the Texans have been run over the last year, which is by one person entirely. But that's Bump where I think that they should be looking at first, cornerback, because I don't know that you're going to find that person that can have an immediate impact in the draft, especially if you're picking towards the back of the first round.
Yeah, if I were to make a move, my first move would be on the defensive line.
Defensive line, okay.
Yes, because obviously you want to sign Clowney, but he needs some help there. Reed didn't have the season we were expecting. Quinn Jefferson contributed. Rasheem Green contributed. Puna Ford did his thing. But you need someone else, and Ansah was kind of a disappointment. He was hurt a lot of the year. So
kind of.
You need someone else to help him out. And when I look at that, getting pressure on the quarterback, there are two names that stick out right now. Eric Armstead from the 49ers will be playing this week. A guy had 10 sacks this year, disruptive, doing his thing. And then Shaq Baird from Tampa Bay, 19.5 sacks.
Is that an anomaly? I mean, that's one of those things where it came out of nowhere. I'd never heard of the guy, honestly, going into the season. And then all of a sudden, he is dropping 19 sacks out of nowhere. He started the year off so crazy as well. I think he had like 8 sacks the first 3 games or something like
that. That's just how it is sometimes in the NFL. You're only as good as your last season. So you can't ignore his 19.5 sacks.
But do you feel that that's going to happen again? Don't you feel like
19.5? I don't think he'll ever do that again. No.
Do you think he'll come close to that? Do you think he'll have 8? Do you think he'll have 9?
I think he can get over 10 sacks, but 19.5, I mean, unless you're in a Hall of Famer, which we don't think this guy is as of yet, you can't expect a guy to come in and have 19.5 sacks. People were saying that Clowney and Ansah were going to have 20 combined sacks. Just not realistic. Great year. He should get paid off of this year, but you can't just ignore his 19 sacks.
Put yourself in the shoes of these two guys that you mentioned. Eric Armstead, who's coming off of a career, who's in the midst of a career season. He had 10 sacks in the first 11 games for the 49ers. He's been dealing with some injury issues of late, but he's back out on the field for San Francisco. And the guy that you just mentioned, Shaquille Barrett, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's in the midst of a career year. Okay, you played in the game. If you have one of these years, statistically, you are not going to be settling for a reasonable contract. Am I right?
No, you're going to get, and you shouldn't. You should get as much money as you can. This is NFL, not for long. You know, who knows when you're not going to play anymore. So if you have a great year, yes, you should go and try to break the bank. If your agent's doing a good job for you, he's going to compare and contrast, and you should be right around where the top guy at your position is getting paid.
Should the Seahawks, though, try to break the bank with a specific player? Should they be a little bit more hesitant as far as doing that? Or do you feel like, okay, you see a guy you like, you break the bank? Because I think with Jadeveon Clowney, we know he's going to get a big contract if he stays with the Seahawks. That should happen. Should they be throwing a ton of money, tons of dollar bills, at theoretical free agent X, Y, or Z?
I think they should. I think that's going to get them over the hump. You got a lot of young guys that you're developing, but Russell Wilson is going to be in his, what, ninth year in the NFL, 10th year in the NFL. So it's time to win now. And they've been conservative over the years, bringing guys in for the cheap, developing guys. Now it's time to win. You go break the bank. You get the guy who you think is going to take this team to the next level at whatever position. Hopefully he's on the defensive side of the ball because they've shown that they struggled at times. I think if the offensive line can get healthy and pick up somebody for the cheap, I think they'll be okay. But you got to address some issues on defense. I say break the bank and go for it.
I like cornerback number one. Very close behind, especially if you don't bring back Jadeveon Clowney. In fact, if you don't bring back Jadeveon Clowney, this goes up to number one. What you just mentioned, Bump, it's the pass rush. They do need to have somebody else there. Hopefully you can find that high-impact guy. I would like to think that they will look at some guys that they think they can make overachieve compared to what they've done in the past. So it maybe isn't these big-ticket guys, because you see sometimes a player, say like a Malik Jackson or someone like that, who gets that big time of contract going from Denver to the Jaguars. How did that work out? Didn't work out so hot. It's not like he was a bad player, but when you give a guy these big time contracts, you're usually paying for past performances. You're not paying for what you're getting. You need something more.
Well, that's all you pay for is past performances, because it's always during the off season, you know. So I get where you come from. You sound like you're more on the conservative side.
Somewhat conservative. I feel like there's a fine balance that you can go after. That's why I look at Chris Harris. He's 32 years old. Realistically, what is a slot corner going to get on the open market? Especially when he's a high-performing slot corner, he's still a slot cornerback. That's where he is at his best. And that means that there are certain teams that are going to look at him and say, well, we're not going to pay you that top cornerback market value like we saw from Stephon Gilmore a couple of seasons ago. So I think that Harris is a guy that I feel checks a lot of boxes and does not destroy you from a cap perspective, where you'd still be able to go after another guy maybe on the defensive line or maybe at another position, Michael Bumpus, right tackle. Jermaine Ifedi, it's over, I think, right? Haven't we all gone through the Jermaine Ifedi experience?
And tackles also do, regardless of the season that he's had, they do command a market because a lot of them don't hit free agency. And so if there's a tackle out there and the Seahawks aren't going after him, he's probably going to get more than what the Seahawks would be willing to pay anyway.
Jessen, you brought up one in our show notes before today. Jack Conklin, who plays for the Tennessee Titans, who we have seen just steamrolling opponents, especially in the running game side of things. Okay, well, Jack Conklin's a big part of that. It's not all of what the Titans are doing, but the Titans invested a lot of money into their offensive line, and now you are seeing really the payoff effect. They've gotten rid of their quarterback running back in Marcus Mariota, and they moved on to Ryan Tannehill. He's not much better, but he's better, which is saying something about Marcus Mariota. So now, in Jack Conklin, you have a guy that did not get picked up for his fifth-year option this past year, so he's going to be a free agent. He's played in all 16 games this year, and he was an All-Pro in 2016, for whatever that's worth. That is someone that I wonder if his value has gone down. He has a right tackle. Teams overpay tackles during free agency, but I am past Jermaine Ifedi. I just, the false starts, the holds, it wasn't his fault on that sack that Preston Smith had of Russell Wilson. It was more, why do you have Jacob Hollister blocking Preston Smith on that game-ending sack? But he was there, and him just being nearby is enough for me. I just don't want to see him there. I'm sorry. I don't want to see him turning around and chasing after a guy. I think they can do better at that position.
Ifedi, as he's grown this year, there are times where Ifedi
plays grown.
Really good football, and there are times where you're just like, what the heck are you doing? I remember one series, I want to say it was against the 49ers, where he had like two penalties on the same drive, and those are the things that frustrate you when it comes to a Fed. But when he's on, he is on. He's ready to go. Now it's just, what does Solari see? Does Solari and Pete Carroll have the patience to say, okay, let's give him a contract. Let's see what he does. If not, you got to go shopping. And for me, I think that you go not on the cheap, but on the cheaper end with that offensive line, because there's so many good pieces together already. You know, you got your Britt, you got your Dwayne Brown, if he's healthy or whatnot. So I don't think they break the bank on the offensive line. I think go a little older there and get some experience, like a Upati, you know, tried him out for a year, probably didn't work out. There's an Anthony Costanzo that's available from the Indianapolis Colts. He's 32 years old. So I think you go with the experience and a little cheaper on that. And when it comes to offensive line,
he is Michael Bumpus and I'm Paul Gallant. Danny O'Neill out. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Okay. Conference championship weekend. It is here. And yeah, the Seahawks aren't there, which makes it very difficult to pick a team to root for. But I am of the belief that you must root for somebody when you are watching a game. It is just not the same if you're sitting back and being a neutral observer. I suppose I'm paid to be that. Screw that. I do not want to be that. I want to watch this game with some rooting interest, to get mad when a team struggles, and to get very excited when a team wins. But I got to figure this out because I can't stand any of these teams. I would like a little help from you. 866-979-3776. What? Danny and Gallant's opening up the phone lines? Yes. 206-421-3776 is the other number to get aboard. Help us out here. Who should we be rooting for this weekend, especially with the Packers still alive and the 49ers still alive? It is Danny and Gallant. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Danny's going to be back with us tomorrow. It's me, Paul Gallant, the wide receiver, Michael Bumpus, to my right. I'm just going to lay it out for you really quickly before we finally turn it over to the people, Michael Bumpus. This is a tough weekend for me personally, and I'm going to dump all my personal feelings out on the entire city of Seattle right now. I cannot root for the Tennessee Titans because they should be the Houston Oilers. I just can't. I physically can't. They left town. It is not cool. Number two, I cannot root for the Kansas City Chiefs. Tyreek Hill? Nope. Travis Kelce? Ugh, no. I cannot root for the Green Bay Packers. I'm sorry, Mr. Discount, double check, but I cannot stand your passive aggression. I just can't deal with it. And then no one's rooting for the San Francisco 49ers. They're not even an option right now. So this is difficult for me. I don't know how you feel about this weekend, Bump, if there's a team that you are picking above all else, but I'm having a tough time.
You know what? Northwesterners 12s don't hate me. I'm rooting for the 49ers.
What?
I'm rooting for the Niners. One.
Whoa!
One, let me tell you why. I appreciate what they do on offense. It is beautiful to watch. Forget your bias or who you like, who you don't like. What they do on offense is fun to watch, and I appreciate it. And then I was listening to Mike Shanahan this morning on like the Golic show, and I like his journey, and I appreciate how he coaches. You look at him on the sideline, straight face the whole time, doesn't really show too much emotion, very composed. I'm not rooting for Aaron Rodgers, just not going to do it. I just don't like his attitude. I appreciate his abilities. Don't like his attitude. Don't think I can play for the guy. On the other side, I don't want to root for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's like a cheat code.
Right. It's like you can't play with them in Madden. That's how I feel. You can't root for a team that's that good.
Yeah. Anybody who plays with the Chiefs in Madden's, I don't respect you. You gotta lower it a little bit. Play with somebody else. And then the Titans just don't do anything for me. I appreciate Henry and his run game or whatnot. Tannehill, it's nice to see Tannehill resurrect his career or whatnot. But, one, I'm from Cali. And, two, I appreciate what the 49ers do on offense. So, sorry, 12s.
Wow.
Rooting for the Niners.
Unbelievable.
Hey, it is.
Unbelievable admission right now. But I haven't even made one because I'm a coward. I don't want to root for any of these teams. 866-979-3776. I believe that Jason in Kirkland is the first caller in Danny and Gallant history. Only, I don't know, 3.5 months into the show's history. Jason, what's up?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you know what? I don't want to root for any of these teams either, but I did live in Arizona. I did live in California. I'm kind of an NFC West family kind of a guy. I feel like if we didn't go and the Niners went in our stead, they'd better go and they'd better win out. So I'm going to root for the Niners on this one. And in the AFC, I got to go with the Titans because they're the underdog. They beat Goliath. Derrick Henry's fun to watch. I feel like him and Tannehill, they're just a group of good guys, period. So for me, I can root for a good guy.
All right, so Jason also with the 49ers. I mean, that is something else. that we have two people that are picking the 49ers here. I feel like this is sacrilegious. I actually feel like if I were to pick it, people would be like, oh, Paul, you're just turning heel right now.
I
can't do it.
They're lighting me up right now on the
text. They're lighting you up?
They're lighting me up.
Oh, good, good. Light him up. Light him up. It's all his fault. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this bump guy.
Maybe it's a next season play, too, because maybe they'll go the way of the Rams, though, where it could be sort of an implosion. So maybe, Bump, you're actually rooting for the Seahawks. If the 49ers get there and then they fall apart the next season...
Great point,
no,
Lydia.
No. We'll just think into the future.
What Super Bowl hangover said. Is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know. I feel like Lydia, that was actually her idea. I feel like you're talking yourself into this right now. You're trying to defend yourself.
Hey, I'm just riding her wave right now.
Okay,
let's get to Chad and Spanaway next.
Okay, Chad, who are you rooting for?
Hey, good morning. Okay, we talked about this on the pre-call before I came on, but sometimes it's not about who you're rooting for, but maybe who you're rooting against.
Oh, I like it.
And so. I have a buddy that lives down in San Francisco area, and he knows that I can't stand the 49ers. But this week, and this week alone, I'm rooting for the Niners to absolutely destroy Green Bay. The comments that that I keep hearing coming out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth about God not being a Seahawks fan or being a Packers fan this week in the past, and then now wanting to get the ball to Jimmy Graham last week because he spent time here, I feel like that's just like putting the knife in and turning it. I can't stand stuff like that. He's cocky. I don't like him. I hope he never wins another championship while he plays.
I like it, Chad.
As far as the AFC, I don't really care because either way doesn't matter to me. But I think that whoever wins the NFC this week is going to end up facing the Chiefs. And I think the Chiefs are going to steamroll whoever they play. It'll be a closer game if it's San Francisco, but I think they're going to win out, and it's going to be an AFC championship this year.
All right, Chad, appreciate it. Okay, so what? Once again, someone is picking the San Francisco 49ers as their team to root for. This is weird. This is weird to me. But I like Chad's explanation here because I was so annoyed when I heard Aaron Rodgers with this, like, oh, yeah, it's great to give Jimmy Graham the ball. Shut up. Just get out of here with that.
They have to root for someone in the NFC as per your declaration. So either way, I know it's hard. But, you know, they have to pick one.
Man, this is tough. It's really hard for me to do it.
Let's go to Justin in Tacoma because I think he'll say something that you like.
Okay, Justin. Justin!
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, buddy.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
No problem. What you got?
So, you know, I'm going to have to go with the AFC. And the reason I say AFC all the way, I like Tennessee and Kansas City, but I don't like Green Bay or San Francisco. To pick on the NFC, I'll say San Francisco for two reasons. One, we almost beat them twice, which shows we're that much closer to becoming in the, going into the Super Bowl. Two, I'm going to have to agree with Lydia. It's all about the hangover. Let's go in there. San Francisco get just destroyed. They come out next year just super sad in their own tears, and they lose out, which helps the Seahawks.
Okay. Listen, Lydia has the best theory here.
She does.
The Super Bowl hangover theory. This is actually, like... If everyone else is doing it, is it cool? Can I join the bandwagon, even though I wasn't courageous enough to just go right out with it like Michael Bumpus was?
See, I'm thinking schematically. I'm thinking football minds, and I just really like what Shanahan does on offense. If I were an offensive coordinator in the NFL, I'd hope to mirror at least a little bit of what Shanahan does. Over
you
there.
Can't be logical in sports hatred, Bump. That's not fair. Let's finally get to Carl in Spokane before we go.
Carl.
Yes.
Carl, who are we rooting for this week?
Hello.
Help me out, Carl. I need your help. What are we doing?
I'm a Packers fan.
I mean, should we just hang up with you right now? Are you about to
boo this man?
Carl.
Yeah.
Carl,
back,
listen.
Go.
So you're rooting against the Packers, obviously. Who are you rooting for in the
AFC?
Yeah,
right. No, I've been a Packers fan for life.
Okay, right, we're done with you, Carl. We're good. You know what? We don't need the gloating. We don't
Super Bowl
need the
hangover. Let's root for the Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah,
let's
go. We're rooting for the Super Bowl hangover here, Lydia. I like this theory here, and Bump, fine. You're out with it. Okay, I guess I am going to root for the San Francisco 49ers. I don't want Aaron Rodgers in there. Ooh, Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest.
Everyone else is doing it, Paul. Everyone else is doing it.
I'm a follower. What can I say? It is Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. He is Michael Bumpus in for Danny. I am Paul Gallant. Coming up next, it's Blue 42. Could Marshawn Lynch be a Seattle Seahawk this coming season? We'll ask about that and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.